You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. We're here with a hardcore legend. I don't know if he likes to walk around thinking of himself as a legend, but we're going to ask him. But we're here with Roger Meard of Agnostic Front, Roger Meard of Disasters, and Roger of a couple of other bands. He's got a very cool new book out right now. It's called Agnostic Front with Time, the Roger Meard Archives. And it's really cool. It's out right now. You can get it at revhq.com, quite fittingly. The book, actually, we're going to talk about that in a second. But let's play the Agnostic Front song. We'll come back, and then we'll say hi to Roger. This is the Agnostic Front classic, Victim in Pain. It doesn't get any more classic than that. Roger, thanks for coming on the Punk News Podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Great to be on it, for sure.
Roger's got a real cool new book. It's out right now. And I'm not even trying to be a salesman, but the super fancy version, I think, is sold out now on Rev HQ. There's the other fancy-ish versions. Those are almost sold out. So if you want to get one, you actually probably should get one like today or tomorrow at Rev HQ. I think Roger said there's going to be a second printing, and then after the second printing, it's going to be kind of that might be it, or that's going to be the only iterations of the book as it is right now, correct?
Well, what's going on is, like you said, the first edition is about to sell out pretty soon. We do have the deluxe is sold out, and we do have a couple we pulled just for these three upcoming events. So we pulled like 10 for each event, just for anybody that wants, or actually 5 of each for the event, just in case anybody wants it, didn't get a chance to get in it. Dr. Strange Records actually selling some right now, of the ones we pulled. The book is going to go into a second print real soon. The second edition is actually going in right now, because the first one's about to sell out probably by this weekend. And then we're going to do a third edition, but it's going to be really condensed. This book is 350 pages. It weighs 4.5 pounds. And it's a beautiful, like beautifully done coffee table like book. It's a visual story of pre-agnostic front into agnostic front, stuff like that. So the third edition, once it gets streamlined, it's going to lose 100 pages or more. So these are the ones you want to grab.
Well, they have it, and actually you can grab it this weekend, or rather this Friday. Roger's going to be in LA with Vinny, and it's actually a pretty cool event. It's Roger with his new book With Time, Vinny with his autobiography. That's going to be at,
Monty's, right?
At Monty's. There you go. So that's this weekend, 6:30 to 10. That's going to be a real cool time out in LA. But in the meantime, Roger, the book is really cool. It's super well done. It's super nicely printed. And it's kind of a collection of Roger's stuff. So it's like if you came to Roger's house and he's like, check out all my cool stuff. And there's a lot of cool stuff in there, some stories about the stuff. Roger, my first question for you is, a lot of people that were architects of a certain genre like yourself, they don't often always have a huge collection because they were living it, so they didn't think to keep it. I'm curious, were you collecting the stuff as you were coming across it? Or do you act like, why is it that you held on to your stuff when people like say, I don't know, I'll just throw out a name. I'll say like Iggy Pop doesn't have a whole lot of early Stooges stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? I just love it, man. I still have my full record collection. This stuff all meant something to me. I still till date revisit old records, old songs, old zines, old flyers. It's just like, it's my recharge. You know what I mean? I love it. I love looking at it. I love looking at everything. I love looking at the old, and especially with this book, it's a collective of like the really earlier stuff, which was really impressive. You know, all the political art and all the stuff like that was going on around New York City. Don't forget, I'm from New York City, where the scene was kind of meshed with the art scene, you know, like your Andy Warhols, your Blondies, your Ramones. So collectively, art played a big part in our scene too. Hence the Misfits. They're very, very, visual band to see. You know what I mean? So I've always collected all this stuff, and I just because I love it. I mean, I have a huge Misfits collection too. It's just stuff that I love. I love it. I love everything. I love looking at it, and I've just kept it, not thinking anything. I wasn't thinking of collecting. I was just thinking, especially the stuff with my name, with my band name on it. I just wanted it because it said my band name on it. It was cool. Why not?
In other interviews too, when speaking of that very early scene, 76, 77, 78, you talk about a lot of reverence. And I do notice and I appreciate that when you're talking about the earliest days of the punk scene, you actually mention how like the Warhol scene and maybe like the New York Dolls scene or whatever, that all intersect in a very artsy spot. And one of the things that I liked about Agnostic Front and Cro-Mags and all Antidote and all those very early hardcore bands, Reagan Youth, is they're all very like it's a new form of art. They're another band, been a band that sounded like Agnostic Front before Agnostic Front. A very bold artistic statement, a very bold artistic vision. And you might disagree with me. I feel as though maybe in the late 80s and early 90s, the hardcore scene kind of lost that reverence or detail to art and kind of became more of a genre rather than an expression, if you will. I wonder if you felt that way or you didn't feel that way.
That's exactly how I felt. That's why I kind of ended the book at a certain time, where I just thought once the digital age came in. Nobody was giving, like, I would go play a show and somebody, like, if you were in a band, you'd give me your 7-inch. Everybody started handing out CDs and burned copies of CDs. Like, nobody really started putting the detail in flyers and, or in, it just changed, It just, I don't know, to me, and I was living through it. I was also very busy, touring even more than in the early days. I was more like doing shows and then hanging out, so it was all like really fun, So I think to answer your question, I feel exactly like you do, and I'm not trying to disrespect any of the bands that came at, on after us. There's a lot of great bands that followed us until this date. There's a lot of great bands, but something along the way lost that art artsy like kind of visual look. You know what I mean? And the same thing with the collective of people putting in and doing things. In a really small community, it became so big and broad that it was just different,
Going back to the collection itself, you lived in a squat for a while. It was a nice, if I recall the stories, you even put like carpet in your squat and you had a nice squat, but it was technically a squat, correct? So I'm amazed at the practicalities of moving a record collection from squats to buildings to houses. Like, is that just dedication to keeping the record collection together? How did that happen? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, keep in mind, I've lost a lot of stuff too. I had two or three squat fires, and I learned from those squat fires right from the very first one. Like one wall was the one the wall got on fire, and I lost like an SSD record got warped or something like that. So I learned to separate everything. Until this day, everything's separate in my house. I don't keep everything like in one shelf like people do. Like you see a whole record collection. I've got it in three different rooms. Just in case, and I learned that the hard way. You know what I mean? So I've got my stuff separated. It's not like you could walk in and like walk into a museum or anything like that. It's all in different places. And if I need something, I know where to go. This book helped me put things in not only chronological order, just organize everything. And it was, and throughout that time when I was moving and going from one squad to another squad or living in a van, et cetera, whatever. I kept stuff at my mom's house, kept stuff at Rob Caboolo's house, kept stuff at Vinny's house, and eventually everything just always found its way back to me. So, and which is cool, so I'm glad it did.
One of the cool things about the book is it's got pictures of Roger's records. It's got pictures of Roger's shirts. So I'm curious, Roger, do you see the book as I'm Roger, this is my life? Do you see the book as here's a history of hardcore and Agnostic Front and early punk rock from my perspective? Or do you see it as here's interesting art, take from it what you take? Or maybe you see it as all of those things.
I see it as the sec your second one. Like I wrote in the very beginning of it, it's like I've had all this stuff and it's with me. Some people get blo like I've once in a while somebody, hey, And I'll show them something. They're like, they're mind blown. Like, I can't believe you got that. You have the acetate. You have the reels. I can't even believe. Like, why don't you put it up? I'm like, well, because I've always just been my stuff. I keep to myself, whatever. And I just felt like it was time now after my book, My Ride, which was my autobiography. I did. It took 10 years to do. I did a few years ago. Vinny came out with his book, The Most Interesting Man in the World. I figured, why not now share all my the stuff that I've been, that basically is a visual looking through history of agnostic front, you know what I mean? So why not? I started doing this in 2020, and it was just fun to do. And it was, I don't know, I just felt like it was time to share, like when I felt like it was time to share my life story. And then I also a lot of things I did, even when I shared my life story, is I did it really for my family. So my family has something to give their children and their great grandchildren, whatever, just to leave a little bit of history of what I've done, what I've accomplished as a young immigrant from Cuba going to America and done what I've done. So I kind of want to leave my legacy, my piece of puzzle there for others to see. And with this same thing with this book, I just want to share with everybody. I'm like, I've had enough of hoarding it for myself, So it's time to share it, so people could see. And it's only a part of it. Like, I mean, to tell you right now, I own, to be straight up, I own 540 different variants of every vinyl cassette. I don't collect CDs, never have, never liked them, never liked anything digital, of just agnostic front.
Whoa.
I have over 100
Holy.
Russian flexi discs. No one's ever knew there was agnostic from Russian flexi discs. That's the kind of stuff I know, and it's wild, it's bizarre. I'm not gonna throw all that in a book. That's insane to look at, and it's just, it's just stuff that I've passionately been like looking out when I, enjoying. I've got friends in all these different countries, and when I know when something's coming out, even a lot of it's bootlegs, but they do reach out to me and they're like, hey, I got this, you want, I'm like, yeah, send it to me. Because how did I know there was 100 flexi discs, Russian flexi discs? Well, one or two fell in my hand and I had to go get the rest as I knew they were out there,
Well, actually, so I'm glad you brought that. What's your opinion on, on bootlegs? It's very divisive in the punk community. Some people feel like I'm the artist, you shouldn't put out my art without me overseeing what it is. And some people in punk rock is like, yeah, it's punk rock, intellectual property is capitalism, so bootlegs are cool. Where do you stand on the bootleg divide?
Well, I've always stood like, you know what? Like, I've always been the type of person, get music by all means necessary. Like, I'm not trying to tell you go out there rob it or anything, but bootlegs are interesting because there are people making money on your band. It's never really bothered me, but what bothers me is no one ever sends me it. Like, at least don't put no return address, but get me a damn copy. Why do I have to go chase this thing down? You know what I mean? And they pop up all the time. Crazy ones pop up. One, there's one right now that's insane. It's like a box set of something. I don't know what it is, for like $500. I'm like, what that? It just pops up. These weird ones here and there. Like, why don't you just send me one? You're making all this money on my band. Send me one. Like I just got four different color variants of a bootleg that just came out in Europe, and I had to have a friend get it for me. And they're selling it to all the record stores. So every record store has it. Somebody knows where it's coming from. How can somebody send me one, But that's the only thing,
Right, and this is kind of a two-part question. In punk rock and hardcore, collecting is very big. People get every variant of every Minor Threat record, or every variant of every Agnostic Front record. If we look at country or pop, like no one's collecting every variant of a Johnny Cash record. Very few people are collecting every variant of a Madonna record. Why do you think in like punk and metal, and like even if you look at goth, people don't collect as much in like goth and industrial as they do punk and metal. Why is that so associated with punk rock?
I don't know. Me, like, to be honest, as myself as a kid, will get my records. I would always, if I liked the record, if I got a record and I liked it, I would buy two or three of them. Only reason I'd buy two or three of them, I didn't know the records were going to cost whatever. I couldn't care. Only reason I bought them is because I was playing them. So the more and more you play, the more chance you get it scratching or falling on the floor, cracking, or somebody stepping on it. So I kind of always had backups. So, and then variants didn't, it wasn't really a thing for me It's awesome, but I'd love always like color vinyl. So if I saw somebody had a color vinyl one, I'm like, I want to get that one too, you know? And if I have it in black, why not get a green one and a red one? You know, it was cool, you know, it was just because I like color, you know? That's how it came. That's how it came to me. And most of my record collection is really people gave to me, you know, like being in the band. It's people every time I show up somewhere, you know, hey, here's my band, here's my band. So it was cool. And I enjoyed it. I love that. Go home, go listen to it, whatever. So I got lucky in that end. You know, then of course there's stuff like every like all four variants of Discord, the Minor Threat, whatever. I've have all that stuff because I just love it, you know. And I just when I'm into like this bands that I really like, I wouldn't mind getting everything and every color I can. But back then, it wasn't a big deal. These things were like $2 to $4 each. Today, that's insane. Like, why would I want every variant of Minor Threat 7-inch right now unless I want to spend $10,000? Like, that's insane. That's absurd. You know what I mean? Now, when I started pulling out all my records, putting all kind of organizing and stuff, because like I said, you know, I had a lot of free time and stuff. I noticed that, well, now that I'm not playing as much as I was when I was a kid, and I'm a little bit more professional, I'm living in a nice place. I don't have to worry about anybody coming over my house and drinking and ruining records. So I have a lot of unplayed stuff that I've never played. So I kept all the unplayed stuff and I got rid of the stuff that I played or whatever. And little behold, little did I know I was going to make some money on it. I didn't know. It was, you know, at one point, I remember I had four of these Carnivore, not Carnivore, they're, one just sold the other day on eBay. One of the what was their band before Carnivore?
Oh, a battery's not included or whatever.
Yeah, that
I know what you mean.
Fallout.
Fallout. There you
I
go.
got a picture of me holding four unplayed ones, you know. And people,
Wow.
wow, you know, I'm like they because they gave it to me, you know, and they would give me a bunch because they knew I was playing. I liked it, you know. So and then it's just like, do I really need four? You know? So then I started trading it with my friends for other stuff that maybe I want, or I started listening. I got a friend that turned me onto a lot of Texas punk, and it was cool, but I had a lot of New York stuff to trade. And that's the kind of stuff we did when we were kids, trading records, trading flyers, trading shirts. You know, it was normal. That's what we did. We go on the road, somebody playing with give you a t-shirt, you gave them their t-shirt. You know, you had your record, here's my record, here's your record. It was fun, you know, that's how it was.
You mentioned the crazy rareness of like Fallout and Agnostic Front's first record, an original press goes for 500 to 1,000 to $2,000. What's your opinion on it might go up, but I think we're at the absolute height of, I guess you'll say, value of collectible punk records. Is that cool in that it shows that this genre and this art has inherent value, or do you
I
think it's
don't
kind of
know.
weird speculation, you know?
It's weird, you know, because there was a point when all that stuff didn't have that much value. I just think there's a lot of musicians, maybe, with a lot of money to spend buying all this stuff, and things got expensive. That's what I think. Or people that have really good jobs and they just want to get it. You know, it's funny because you think about like Poison Idea with that their album, like Record Collectors album and stuff like that, like. Are pretentious assholes, jerks, you know what I mean? I it's weird because I don't look at myself as a record collector, you know. I'm a music enthusiast. I love it. I love these songs, these bands, these, you know, and it's kind of cool to get a different variation of a sleeve for me because I love art. I love you know, like stuff like that. You know, like I had flyers from so many every band in New York. I had flyers that were incredible. You know, at one point I got rid of a lot of stuff because I just focused on Agnostic Front, so I just kept all my Agnostic Front flyers, all my Misfits flyers, my Samhain flyers, and everything else I parted with. And then some of the stuff I didn't have, I was managed to trade. And there's spots in my Agnostic Front flyer collection, that I wish I could come across. And hopefully I will to fill in these spots, you know, because that's really all I really want is just my own collection of my own band, you know.
What's the crown jewel of your collection, or one of the crown jewels? What's like one of the things that you're most psyched to have, or means the most to you, maybe?
You mean Agnostic Front based? I would say like just knowing the fact, I mean, I have the reels, the re actual reels recording, and that's before the acetates. I have stampers of United Blood. I still have the insert collage. I've got like amazing visual stuff. People have come over to my house like, I can't even believe I'm holding this. Like, you know, like, blah blah blah. But that's as far as like Nosferatu and stuff like that's pretty damn rare and pretty special to me. And as far as other bands, I've got a lot of cool other stuff too. Like a lot of Misfits is a band I collected, for example, and because I was always a big Misfits fan. I've got all the shirts I would order in the Fiend Club and
Oh, wow.
every color you could think of vinyl because I like color vinyl, and if it was a color I didn't know about, I'd try to go find it, because that's just stuff I love. Actually, if you want to really see some of my stuff, I'll let you know. There's during the pandemic when I started doing this book, whatever, too. I also started doing like a little tour around the country with some of my records. I would play records from an area, and people didn't catch on to it. I was really touring around the country, you know what I mean? And I, you know, and then towards the end, I started telling stories about this stuff. Is I have a little site. It's called on Instagram. It's called Vinyl Assault. It's on Instagram. If you go to there, you'll see like my record, a lot of my record collection. Not everything, because I'm not going to be there all day. And I got things. I got a life to live over here. I've got kids and stuff, But you'll see some pretty rare stuff. You'll be like every Discord, every like Touch and Go, like super super rare stuff. A lot of Mr. Every New York hardcore 7-inch you could think of, and every color, every variant, whatever. Because I just started putting stuff out there, not letting people know. It was just me telling stories and putting it out there. And eventually people started figuring things out. You know what I mean? But check that out. It's called Vinyl Assault. It's on Instagram, and you'll have a blast going through all that stuff and reading some of that stuff,
Well, that's very cool. Roger, I just got a few questions left for you, then I'll let you go. You're doing your book signing with Vinny on Friday in LA. What's the relationship between you and Vinny? Are you brothers? Are you friends? Are you working associates? Because not all, like famously the Ramones, most of them hated each other. You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
Whereas,
We don't hate each other.
so what is your relationship? Is it brothers? Is it best friends? Is it friends, working associates? What is your relationship?
It's like a bad marriage, and we literally stick around for the kids. What I mean? We're two different people. We love each other. Come on. Vinny is a brother to me, and my family has pretty much adopted him. He doesn't have any brothers or sisters. He has no living relatives, you know what I mean? And my family has always adopted him. So my family became like his family. I mean, my sister, he calls my sister all the time, calls my brother, calls my mommy. It's like normal, you know? I mean, he's been in my life for, if you get my book, you'll read, I wrote a little thing on him. I didn't know he was going to be so important in my life, but he's been in my life for a good 40, 42, 43 years, We have a very good relationship, but we have our distance, you know what I mean? He's a little too much for me sometimes, and I'm a more calmer person, and I'm a more calmer family type of guy. He's just a wild guy, but he's living an incredible life. I'm not going to talk much about it because I want you to read it in my book, and I also want to say it's not just the LA show at Monty's is Friday, but we also have Saturday in Long Beach at Alex's bar. We're going to be there for like 4 hours with books, me and Vinny. Signing and selling some of the rare ones, whatever. And then the next day we're going to be at Dr. Strange Records on Sunday. Again, I think between 12 and 4, and it's going to be live music, everything there. So it's a weekend in Southern California of me and Vinny out there just, talking about stuff and meeting new people, meeting old friends, whatever, and signing books and stuff like that.
Well, very good. I just have a couple last questions for you, then I will let you go. Agnostic Front, is there anything in the works?
Yeah, we got a new album and
Oh.
we're recording in January. So it's funny, right before I spoke to you, I was speaking to Mike Gallo. We were talking about like we have about four songs to complete lyrically. So we're working on a new album and I'm really happy with it. So that as you see, there's no intentions of us stopping for anything. We've been living basically our retirement, like what we've been living our lives for the last 43 years is unbelievable. Like, people wait till they're 65, 70 to retire, then go see the world. We've been seeing the world, there's no
Yeah.
stop. We've been seeing the world multiple times. We've been living our life, our retirement,
Well, there you have it. I've got one last question for you, then I'll let you go. Is this is what I call the James Brown question? Is unquestionably agnostic front, architects, founders, extremely influential, among the most important people in hardcore and punk rock and fast, heavy art, if you will. My question is, do you feel like a legend or do you just feel like a guy? And before you answer, I want you to consider James Brown. James Brown would go around saying, I'm the greatest, because he is the greatest. You know what I mean? Whereas maybe someone like, I don't know, maybe like Lee Ronaldo of Sonic Youth might be a little bit more limited in his self-appraisal. I'm curious as to your view of you, particularly in light of all these incredible things you have in your brand new book.
Well, you know, anybody that knows me knows I'm a pretty humble guy anyway. I don't think I'll never go around saying I am the best or even agnostic front's the best anything. That was never my agenda or my goal. You know, I never thought we'd ever go past New York City. You know, here I am touring the world, whatever. I'm grateful for everyone that's supported us and been there for us. But I'm a normal guy. You know, and anybody that really meets me, and when they know they can just come up to me, approach me, and just shake my hand and talk to me, they realize that we're no different. You know, like, and I've told people many times, just because I'm on stage doesn't make me any better than you. Just because I have this mic doesn't mean I'm anything more than you. In fact, this stage is yours. Come up here, sing along with me. Let's have a great time. You know, like, I can't do that. You know, I'm not no me type of person. If anything, I'm us. We've done this together. And I've always talked about my peers. I've always been, you know, we've done this with our peers, you know, like, you know, we did this together.
Well, there you have it. And we're going to do it together by reading reading and looking at Roger's brand new book, With Time, The Roger Mir Archives. You can get it at Rev HQ. We're going to close out with a song, and we're going to close it with the Agnostic Front song, With Time. Also, Roger and Vinny together, signing both of their books at Monty's in L.A. on Friday, at Alex's Bar in Long Beach on Saturday, a great, great venue, Alex's Bar, and at Dr. Strange, great record store on Sunday. Roger, thanks again for coming on. Any closing words before we play With Time?
Nah, man, thank you for having me. You know, it was awesome to talk to you. I hope that everybody enjoys my new book. It's basically something that I really wanted to do for New York hardcore. Just like when we, you know, what's cool about this book, I don't know if I mentioned it, it's just not only is it a visual thing on the band, I kept a diary, and in the middle, and somewhere in the middle of this book, all of a sudden, because this is in chronological order, it starts like in 77 with Vinny's band, you know, and moves on. And I kept this diary, and all of a sudden now you're on the road with us. You're reading the diary notes, whatever, and we're on this tour. And, you know, and it's kind of cool. Like, it's like, it's like I've always done everything with the reader in mind. Yeah, I want you to walk these shoes with me and take a visual look of what my life and Vinny's life and what, you know, Agnostic Front and the early New York hardcore life was like, you know.
Well, I think the book does a great job of that, and I love seeing the hardcore world through Roger's eyes. Roger, thanks again. Best of luck to you. I'm sure the book already is a big success, so kudos to you. And thanks again, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And now we're going to play With Time by Agnostic Front. And we're back. And what's going on? What's happening?
We're back. Roger was very cool. Lots of interesting cool, stories.
Well, honestly, we didn't even get to like one third of the question. He had to go because he had to do something.
He had time.
I wanted to ask him about seeing the police. That's the first band he saw at CBGB's. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining seeing the police at CBGB's. I wanted to ask him about like, you know, like the book is very, I'm not trying to do a sales pitch for the book here, book is a very high quality book. And sometimes in punk and especially hardcore, not so much now, but maybe in the 80s and 90s, like cheap and crappy was the aesthetic, which I've never been a fan of, you know? And so I'm curious as to his opinion on the cheap and crappy aesthetic, but maybe we'll have him again. And I just want to, like, I didn't realize this, Vinny is 10 years older than Roger. And cool. like Vinny comes from like before the first wave of New York punk, like, well, not before, he comes from the time of the New York Dolls, the time of the Dead Boys, you know, just before the Ramones, like he was in the scene at that time. So I'm curious as to how that affected Roger. And of course, Roger's brother, Freddie Madball, is 10 years younger than Roger. So it's an interesting link. You know what I mean?
That would be cool to know.
Well,
so many questions, not enough time.
So many questions. I was kind of hoping he would hang around for the news, honestly, because I wanted to ask him about AI again. But what can you do? What can you do? You know. What's going on? And what's happening? What's going on?
I'm back in Southern Ontario.
How was your vacation?
Northern Ontario for a bit. It was good. Went up for a friend's birthday, so it was the first time I been on a plane. So that was exciting. How'd that go?
Did you have fun on a plane?
Going up was good. Going up was fine. We went up at night. So it was dark and it was pretty neat. And there were some lights and stuff.
Were nice you first class, business class? What kind, was it a private plane? What level of plane?
I wish it was a private plane. There's an airline called Porter and it's all economy. So it's all like two seats. In like these, they're not like jumbo jets. They still have propellers, but they're not like bush planes.
Wait, you want a plane with propeller?
Yeah, but it's not a bush plane. Like, it's a good size plane.
That's like crazy. I've never been on. I don't ever want to be on a plane. Like, and where do you live? Do you live in like the outback or something?
We flew to the outback, pretty much.
Right, Mike. Let's get all my didgeridoo and take on off.
Yeah, just...
So what'd you guys do for the birthday celebrations? You guys do anything wild and crazy?
One of my friend's favorite bands is Marianas Trench, so she got tickets to go see them, and there was like this VIP thingy, which like a Q&A, and we got a picture together. So we have like matching shirts, so we wore the matching shirts to the Q&A, and that was pretty nice. And then just kind of hung out.
Is that a big band? I've never heard of it. Is that a big band, Marianas Trench? I've never heard of that band.
They just released an album. They were pretty big when I was in high school. Like, they're still big.
They're pretty big. 500,000 followers on Facebook. That is pretty big.
Yeah. So, like, they're good. They're like pop rock, kind of.
Is it a rock band? Is it a punk band? Like, what kind of band is it?
It's like a very poppy rock band.
Mm-hmm. So kind of it's like the Killers or something?
Kind of.
Like, what kind of person listens to Marianas Trench? Like, the cool kids, the weirdos? Who listens to Marianas Trench?
Honestly, everybody. Like, I don't know a lot of people who don't or who don't know about them. They've been played on, like, TV and, you know, like, they're on the radio sometimes and, like, things like that. So they're just kind of like, there are certain bands that kind of permeate, you know, and I feel like they're one of them. Like,
I see that.
Yeah.
I see that on Instagram. The only people that I know that follow them are you and Tegan and Sarah.
Oh, so there you go. The Canadians. See?
Well,
that's funny.
So you had a good time then?
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. Cool. It was in an auditorium, or not an auditorium, at like a community theater. So it had a really cool vibe to it. And the acoustics were great. First time in Thunder Bay too, so that was pretty interesting. It gets really cold up there.
How is it?
Yeah, it was like -11 one day, and it was like, oh my god, and that wasn't even with the wind chill, so it was like, ooh, she's cold. But it was cool again. Like, the nature is really pretty. Like, they have a landmark called the Sleeping Giant, which is pretty cool, so could see that. There was a Christmas train that went by, which was wild. So like where our hotel was by a like a rail line. So there were like trains going by like all the time. And one of them, like I heard Christmas music and it was like all lit up and it was sponsored by some radio station or something. But there was all these lights. I'll send you a video of it because it's really cool. But that was very festive and very fun.
Canada is so big. Canada is so
Yeah.
gigantic. Canada's got to be bigger than America square footage
It
wise, right?
is. Canada is the second largest country in the world.
Who's the biggest? China?
Russia.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. And the thing with like Canada, which is nuts too, is like Ontario, just by like the province I'm in. Oh, I don't remember the actual percentage, but only a certain percentage is actually inhabited.
Yeah, like, isn't Canada like. Canada is mostly empty, right?
I think that's
Like,
the stat.
does anybody live in the Northwest Territories?
Oh yeah, people live in the
People,
territories.
really?
Yeah, there's Inuit communities who live up there, who've lived up there for centuries.
Oh man,
There.
looks to me that Canada's like, I mean, isn't the Canadian population only like 100 million? We'll get to actual
I'm
punk
not
in a second.
sure. Yeah,
You don't
we'll
know the
get to
population of
actual
your
punk in a
country yet?
minute.
You don't know the population of your country?
It's a couple million, I think. I think it's
Population is
five.
41 million.
41 million. Oh shit, I'm off.
Wait, that can't be
Okay.
right. Is that right?
That's a lot of
Oh,
people.
yeah, 41 million. Okay,
Probably.
yeah. America's 400 million. So, yeah. So there
We
you
have
go.
lots of space. But anyway, yeah, it was fun. My friend ended up getting food poisoning, which kind of sucked.
What'd you eat?
Oh, it was Subway. It was like the.
Subway.
Yeah, it was Subway. It was a thing you don't expect to get food poisoning.
Well, I will say I usually love
The
Subway, but
meat was like rancid.
I would say in the past maybe 10 to 15 years, like Subway used to be awesome. Now it's like pretty shitty actually. Like Subway is like lousy now, like bad. So
Yeah.
I'm not pro Subway. I'm really I would like to be,
No.
but I'm not,
There's so many like better sub spots, but
True,
like
indeed.
yeah, the flight home was insane.
Why? What happened?
So it started off and like it was totally fine, like no big deal, right? We're taking off halfway through. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can fly so many places. I'm like making all these like big plans. And then we hit turbulence. And do you want to guess how long the turbulence lasted for, John?
Well, it should be like 5 minutes, but was it much longer than that?
Oh, it was much longer than
How
5 minutes.
longer was it?
40 minutes.
Ooh, that is a lot of turbulence. Turbulence does suck in a plane. That
It was
sucks.
40 minutes.
That sucks
Yeah.
for your first time on a plane. That sucks. That sucks.
Technically the second time, but still not good. I thought I was gonna pass out. It was so bad.
Well,
Like I'm usually fine
did it
on
have a
like roller
propeller? Were you
coasters.
still on the propeller plane? That's why I
Oh
am. That's
yeah.
Don't ever go on a propeller plane. I'm getting on a real plane. What's your problem?
These are the only ones that fly.
You should keep traveling and don't get on a propeller plane. Get on like a real plane next time, and you'll have a good time. So listen, let's hit some news. M Sick New
Yeah.
World is
Oh
canceled.
God.
I was actually shocked, frankly. I was shocked. They didn't
Yeah.
really give. They didn't really give a reason. They said. Despite our best efforts, we've encountered unforeseen circumstances that we are unable to overcome for next year's show. Of course, those unforeseen circumstances are probably lack of ticket sales because tickets were $500 each. And it's unconfirmed that Metallica and Ridley Linkin Park were getting 5 mil each.
Oh gosh.
So, AM, are you shocked at Linkin Park? It's 5 mil. Linkin Park? That's unconfirmed. But also, what's your perspective on the failure of this we'll call new style of music festival where they pack 50 bands in for like 20-minute sets and charge you like not $120, but rather $500, 600 after fees
For one day,
for
and you
one
don't even
day?
get to see everybody, and if there's
Right.
traffic, you're fucked.
Right.
Well, yeah, I was surprised that it was canceled because this was scheduled for what, like the summer, wasn't it? Like it was scheduled for much later in 2025,
Like May or something, I think.
May,
Let's look. It was scheduled for no April 2025, just
April.
before Punk Rock Bowling, 1 month
Okay.
before.
Okay. Yeah, so I thought like, wow, it's pretty early to call it. And my first thing was 100%, oh, it's ticket sales because it's insane to go see them. And again, like it's not worth it, right? But now, and I think they were trying to, in their statement, throw suspicion away from that because they were like, it's no longer happening in Las Vegas, which kind of makes you wonder, like, did something happen with the venue or the venue space or the city? And it's like, I don't think so. I think that's just a red herring.
I agree because Las Vegas specifically wants events there and is famously unlike Philadelphia or Asbury Park, Las Vegas is famously welcoming to music festivals because they want people to come there and stay in hotels and gamble.
It's like built for entertainment, right? Like
Yeah.
it's like right there. So I think that's
Good
complete. Sorry.
analysis. Good analysis, Ed. Good analysis. Indeed.
Thank you. And then $5 million for the headliners. Is that what you said?
That's the unconfirmed
That's the
rumors.
unconfirmed rumors.
I
Okay.
buy that from Metallica. I don't think Linkin Park's getting 5 mil unless their booking agent like drove a super hard bargain. But in that case, the booking agent oversold it. You know what I mean? Because if they can't pay out, then there's no point in getting an insane figure, you know?
Yeah, like what's the point? 5 million for Metallica though still seems pretty steep.
I'm sure Metallica gets that at their shows, though. Between I mean, look at it. Metallica plays 40,000 people venue, right? Let's say the average ticket price is like 100. Actually, average ticket price now for that is the average, mind you, not even the height, is probably $200, right?
Right.
So 40,000 times 200 would be 400,000, 4 million, $8 million are ticket sales alone. Now that's not all profit, mind you, but then
No.
you add in merch. It's 5 mil easy.
True.
You know what I mean? They actually might be taking a little bit of a pay cut at 5 mil, to tell you the truth, you know.
Yeah, probably. But yeah. Wasn't it like the majority of the bands who are playing the festival were already on tours, like
I don't know
around
that
that
the
time, and then they just
I
kind of stopped to play the festival?
well,
Because I saw something like that and I was like,
the way the story actually broke is Trevor Dunn was doing it. Trevor Dunn is in Tomahawk and he also plays with
Oh, yeah.
Buzz Osborne, and sometimes he plays with the Melvins. And so he was on some, actually, I think it was on the Vinyl Guide podcast, I think it was. And he said, yeah, we're not doing Sick New World because we're not doing our tour because Sick New World canceled and our entire tour was built around Sick New World.
Right.
Which I'm like, well, then just do a Las Vegas. Like, are you getting that much? Maybe they were getting that much more money for one date. And so that's how it kind of broke, and that's how this whole thing kind of fell apart.
Sure.
And I mean, but what do you take from this? What's the lesson here, or what's the significance of a new style Jumbo Fest failing?
That they're not bulletproof. That like they're touted as these things that are like the new pillars, right? And whatever. And it's like, no, you're fucking not. You know, no one can afford to pay $500, $600 per ticket for one day.
Well, what's annoying to me is a lot of people, well, a lot of people can, which shows the significant income inequality, but also a lot of people are spending $500 for these tickets, and they really should not be spending $500 for these tickets. You know what I mean?
Vote with your dollar kind of thing.
Here's what I take from it is, hey, I'm glad to see, I'm sorry for the bands, but I'm glad to see this fail. Everything is getting so much more expensive. Like I said, at ball games, baseball games, they used to charge $20 for parking, and then they said, well, what if we charge $100 and they just started and
What?
no one said no, you know what I mean?
Oh my
And so
God.
the prices of everything are out of control. I'm glad to see people voting with their dollars finally. I'm glad to see this kind of thing fail. And because A, no concert is worth $500, no concert. B, you get to see the Melvins for 20 minutes. You get to see Scal for
Yeah.
15 minutes. Like, what? That's so underwhelming when you actually, you know, see that. But I do wonder, and this was the Live Nation one, right?
Yes.
I do wonder if Live Nation cares that much, and maybe they don't even care that much, and here's why. There's some interview where somebody, I forget where it was, and I'm paraphrasing a huge amount. There's an interview where someone's talking about Woodstock, and Woodstock actually cost money to get in, and actually the price of Woodstock actually really wasn't that cheap for the time. Let's see here, cost of Woodstock ticket. I'm going off on a little tangent here.
Okay.
$24 in 1969. So let's
$24.
see how much that is
Okay.
now. So $1969 to now. Okay, so what did I say, 24?
Yep, 24.
So that would be Bear with me one second. Not $24 in 1969 would be $200 today. So that's actually like
Oh.
a lot. You know what I mean?
Shit.
But with
Okay.
Woodstock is the vast majority of people didn't pay, and the bathrooms
Right.
broke, and there's nowhere to stay, and like the grounds got famously like ruined, you know?
Yeah.
And the person said, you know, Woodstock wasn't the first jumbo festival, but it was one of the first. And at that time, they, meaning, you know, organizers or financiers or backers, they hadn't figured out how to do a festival, you know? And then if you look into the 70s, you know, I mean, if you talk to your dad or your grandpa, however old you are, they all get the story about, not my dad, but because my dad's a square, which I'm actually very proud of my dad that he's a square. But like people are like, yeah, I snuck in to see Van Halen in 1978. We just hopped the fence. Or like, there's no fence hopping in 2024. There's no fence you can hop,
Right.
you know? But like, so like in like the 70s, like famously festivals, the sound was terrible. Like you couldn't even tell what song was playing, but people were still sneaking in, not like Woodstock. So and then in the 80s, particularly with the Rolling Stones Steel Wheel tours, that's when festivals really got kind of expensive, and things became, I guess, more corporate is the wrong word, but I guess more evil corporate maybe is the right word, you know?
Sure.
Until so like that is much like a medicine, much like bridge building, much like any product or service. It's been refined to a degree, made better to a degree, but made it harder for people to get stuff for free. It's been refined so that dollars can be maximized. And so here we're at the end game. One day, 50 bands, $500. Like that, but like we've quote perfected it, if you will. We've reached the end game. We've perfected, you know, just like but before the frisbee, there was the boomerang. Before there was a boomerang, there was like, you know, so like the frisbee is the final iteration of the frisbee. It works perfectly. So
Yeah.
hypothetically, this one day Jumbo Fest, it's the end game for the festival. It is the most perfect festival when it comes to extracting money from people's wallets, which is the purpose of a festival like this. But it failed. So that is, whereas a normal quote festival, like, I don't know, I'm sorry, Woodstock, like Riot Fest is like $300, or Coachella is 3 days, but that's like $800 or something, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty steep.
So like, that's one step before this ridiculous $500 one day festival, you know? So
Oh, sure.
they've
Okay.
gone to the edge, and they've gone past the edge. So they realize, okay, we know we're literally getting every single penny we can get. We know where the line is where we can get every penny without it failing. So maybe Live Nation doesn't even care, because now they know where the absolute limit of gouging is. And so now they know exactly how to get every single penny they can get, you know. I don't know, you know what I mean? But I
Yeah.
so that's my take on it. I'm not hot on these one day mega fests at all. They just seem like they suck. I'm glad to see it fail and Live Nation lose money, although they probably didn't lose any money. They probably had insurance backing it. You said you were surprised to see that it was canceled so early. What a lot of people might not know is that these festivals, much like movies, there's so much science behind them, and they know exactly how many tickets they need to sell at a certain part to be on track
Oh,
or to be
sure.
near on track. So just like a movie has projections, I'm sure they saw they were way below their projections, and there's not there's at a $500 ticket, you know, 1 month. At a punk show where it's a $15 show, you actually might have an explosive surge like 6 weeks in, or you know, it might happen.
Right.
At a $500 ticket with 50,000 people, that's not going to happen, you know? And so I'm sure they saw that it was failing, and they decided to pull the plug. So I'm glad this failed. But you know, is this going to be the end of price gouging concert slash festivals woes? No, but maybe people will kind of start to vote with their tickets, and I mean, vote with their dollars. We'll see.
I hope so. That would be nice. Let's abolish the one day festival while we still can.
So, are you not a fan of a one day festival in any iteration, or just in this iteration?
Just like the mega festivals. I think if
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like a one day festival where you have like some local bands and stuff, it's cool.
yeah. Yeah, it's kind of
Yeah.
suck, man. So, yeah. But I mean, but also, like, who's paying $500 to see Linkin Park for real? you know?
I would like to know, because that'd be a person to avoid.
And why would you pay $500 to see Metallica when you can go see Metallica for $250? Like, is the other bands on this a draw? Like, is anyone psyched to see Metallica and like, let me see who's playing this.
All right, pulling up the
Queens of
poster.
the Stone Age. Like, does anyone really care about Queens? Well, actually, people do, I guess. But like, I don't know. It just seems like it's a whole lot of bands without any real, I don't know, style.
Cohesion.
Yeah, it's like here's a bunch of bands and a shitty poster, you know?
Oh yeah, the not themed but kind
Yeah.
of underwater or whatever.
It's just so lazy. Well, I'm glad to see him fail him. I'm glad. Like,
Let's see.
what's the idea behind Sick New World? You know what I mean? Like it appears to be kind of gothy, Tim Burton-ish, but is Metallica and Queens of the Stone Age, are they gothy and Tim Burton-ish? You know what I mean?
No,
Like
they are
Evanescence,
not.
Sisters of Mercy, Ministry.
Oh
Okay,
yeah, Sisters
fine.
of Mercy.
But is Metallica at this point in age, it's just a generic rock band that, quote, everyone likes. Not me, but everyone likes. You know what I mean? Like, here they're like the Foo Fighters, you know. It's like here's the Foo Fighters, a rock band, you know.
Enjoy the rock.
Yeah, here is some rock for you, you know. Anyways. Well, I'm glad to see it fail, M. But on the other hand, M, actually, I could be totally wrong
What's up?
because ticket sales, I've actually been talking to a lot of promoters. Apparently this year ticket sales have actually been down a lot, and I know firsthand from a
Okay.
couple of shows that I've thrown recently, like it's actually been a real chore to sell tickets harder than it used to be. So maybe people just aren't going to concerts as much, either because of the economy or maybe everyone's depressed because Trump got elected. I don't know. I don't know.
Probably a bit of both.
Yeah, probably. Anyways,
Probably.
well, there you go, man. M, Dr. Dre, and Snoop have released a
Oh,
single,
God.
and it's with Sting of the Police. It's called
With Sting.
with Sting. Dre, Snoop. No, Snoop, Dre, and Sting. The track is called, I think it's Another Part of Me, I think. The track
Yeah,
is
that's right.
called Another Part of Me, and it's got Sting doing the riff from Message in a Bottle while Snoop raps over it and Dre produces. And Doggy Style, one of the most iconic, and the reason that the new Snoop album, Missionary, is important, is not important, is significant. It's the first all Dre produced Snoop record since the iconic Doggy Style. I like the Doggy Style album. Dre is very much a different producer now than he was during Doggy Style. Like his music sounds totally different. And the fact of the matter is, like Dre kind of like kept changing his sound up until Dre 2001. And then since 2001, he's kind of put out the same sounding record over and over and over, if you will. And
Oh,
I much
okay.
prefer the earlier stuff. So that being said, this record, a lot of people are looking forward to this record. I thought this song was underwhelming, kind of dumb, and really not that exciting and kind of lazy. I think it's going to be a throwaway record, frankly. I think it's not that good.
When it's like when it was Anne Sting, I was like, oh, he's gonna like be singing on it, or he's gonna lend vocals in some way, and then it was just like he's just doing the riff, and then I was
Yeah.
like, what?
You're right, and then it's like here's Sting playing a riff, and Snoop rapping over it. But the question is, why? Like, why? You know, like there's no real cohesion. It's like here's the riff from Message in a Bottle and Snoop rapping. Like that's all it is, you know.
Also couldn't figure out what the vibe was supposed to be, because it was like
Yeah.
the beginning, like they're hyping everyone up, and then the end, they're hyping everyone up, and then in the middle, it's just kind of like chill.
Yeah.
Not much
So.
happens. I think Snoop sings at one point, if I remember correctly.
And what's your stance on Snoop?
From like again, I know of very little about him, and then just whatever we've talked about on the podcast. One of the things I remember was that he did everything like kind of for his family to support them and stuff.
Well, who said that?
It was in some documentary.
Please. I mean, I like Snoop. Snoop's
Was like,
cool.
oh, that's nice.
Snoop is a gangster rapper. I mean, like
Yeah.
And he rapped because he wanted to be a famous rapper, which I'm not saying is a bad thing.
No, not at
but
all.
But this for his family. Everyone does stuff for their family, you know, like, you know, it's not like he was like, I need to support my family. What should I do? I'll become a rapper. Like, if he wanted to quote support his family, he would have got a normal job. You know what I mean? Not become a rapper, you know?
Oh, have you seen the video of him running? This is nothing to do with anything, but just have you?
No.
Oh my gosh, it's the best because he is so tall. He is just a bunch of limbs, and it's awesome.
Snoop is very tall and very skinny.
Yes, he is all limbs, that man. So from what I know about him, he seems okay. But again, like, it's, we've kind of talked about this, I think, the last time, like the cuddly image, and then like the what he wants to present with his music. Or
yeah,
like
I'm not,
how
I,
it's
I,
changed.
I have no problem with a person changing their image. And that's why I'm a little annoyed at Alice Cooper. It's the same exact reason. I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan. And I get to say Alice Cooper doesn't want to be like this crazy drug-addled booze guy anymore. And that's cool. But then, like, just say that was me then and this is me now. Like, and like Snoop, it's annoying to me that Snoop is, well, actually, let me think about this through. You know, Snoop
okay.
with Martha Stewart, he's cuddly Snoop. Oh, it's Snoop. Can you believe that Snoop with Martha Stewart? Oh my God, you know. And it's like, no, that's Snoop, man. Like, he used to be or is incredibly gangsta. But I just thought of this myself.
Yes, what's up?
If we say Snoop is gangsta, the point of being gangsta is to make money. The point of being gangsta isn't to say, look at me, I'm dangerous. It's to make money. So if Snoop being gangsta realizes that he can be a fake cuddly person to make way more money, which is exactly what he did, then maybe Snoop is still extremely gangsta.
I'd say so. And he bought his record label, his former record label.
I just wish his music was better. I mean, I like Doggy Style a lot. Although, even with Doggy Style, like, there's some things that are really weird in that record, and I'm not sure they're supposed to be as weird as they are.
What are weird things?
Well, there's like, you know, all well, so like when there was the beef with Dre, so of course, there was the beef with Death Row versus Eazy-E.
Yes.
And so through that, Shug had Dre and Snoop rap against Eazy-E. And maybe even Dre did, maybe it wasn't just, you know, maybe Dre wanted to, because Eazy-E, through his lawyer, Jerry Heller, certainly did rip off Ice Cube and Dre. And
oh,
so,
okay.
Like on the Chronic, like Dre, like both Dre and Snoop are like Eazy-E could suck my dick. And they talk about like banging him in the ass. And I'm like, I'm not sure that really is conveying what you wanted to convey, you know? And then, like, on Doggy Style, like, you know, gangsters, you know, back then especially, but even now, but a lot of gangster rap is very homophobic, you know? And it's like, mm-hmm. Well, if they're, why are they saying that Eazy-E should suck their dick if they're homophobic? That's weird to me, you know what I mean? And then in Doggy Style, and actually I think even in a couple of Dre tracks, like, there's one song on Doggy Style where Snoop is talking about, like, him and his four friends having sex with a girl at the same time. Which seems kind of gay to me. And I don't mean that derogatorily. I mean that factually. Like, if it's four men and one woman, it's kind of gay or at least bisexual. You know what I mean? And so if it is gay or bisexual, then how come they're homophobic? You see what I'm saying? And I'm not sure they're being honest with themselves, for one thing. And I'm not sure they've thought through what they're trying to convey. You see what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
I think so. I think it's how you're saying things is like what you actually mean.
Yeah, yeah,
and you're
yeah.
Like, no, but I'm being mean. It's like, I don't think you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know, man. And also, like, you know, when you're 16 or 17 and, you know, Snoop or Dre is like, you know, like, bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks. You're like, yeah, that's hardcore. Now I'm like, that's not cool, man. Like, it's not cool just to call women bitches. Like, that's not cool. You know, like, you know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Some of that stuff hasn't aged that well. You know, the music's good.
No.
And you know, Snoop really is not a great rapper. And that, like, he never says anything that profound. But he's one of the best rappers in how he says it. You know what I mean? Like, I got my mind on my money and my money on my mind. Like, that doesn't mean anything, but it sounds cool. You know what I mean? So, like, Snoop is a good singer. And so I love when Snoop sings that. But anyways, I don't know how we got off on such a tangent. I think Snoop's cool. I actually think I like Snoop better than Dre these days. But that being said, I thought this track was pretty whack. And I feel like no one's really trying that hard. I feel like Dre's like, here's my beat. And no one can challenge Dre because he's Dre. And the result is a mediocre track. Like, much like Rick Rubin, I think Dre is past his heyday and his artistic forward-thinking phase, you know?
Interesting. You think he's just kind of gotten comfortable?
Yes. And I feel like he's not hungry like he used to be. And I don't even mean hungry money monetarily wise. I mean artistically wise. I mean, Dre is a billionaire. He doesn't have to do anything. And so it's like, eh, and Dre famously used to require like 150 takes from people and stuff. And like he used to drive people insane because he was so dedicated to getting the perfect take. And this just like I mean, if you look at like some of Snoop's biggest songs, you know, like you know, Gin and Juice or Snoop Dogg, What's My Name? Like, they're all super catchy. This is just like Snoop rapping some generic thing over Sting. And I feel like it's a lost cause. I feel like Sting and Snoop has great potential because it's weird and funny. Yeah. Like that's an interesting mix, you know?
And they could do some cool stuff.
We just get this, you know what I mean? Of course, it is always hard to combine rap and rock. It's so hard to combine rap and rock. It really is. Like, I don't know.
It has to be done well.
Yeah, but who's done it well? Beastie Boys?
Rage Against the Machine.
Rage. I'm not a huge Rage, but I'll give it to him. Definitely not Linkin Park. You know, definitely not Limp Bizkit.
It's like, what do you classify as rapping? Though, like, when you're getting into nu metal, like, what classifies as rapping? Like, is what Fred Durst is doing, is that rapping? Or is that just...
Well, I mean, he says it's rapping, but I wouldn't say it's rapping. I think it's bad. No, but to be fair, I would say it is rapping, but it's bad rapping.
Okay. Well, like, where do you stand on, like, System of a Down, then? Are they rapping, or are they just going fast?
They're just going fast. That's not rapping, Em.
Okay. What about Slipknot? Are they rapping, or are they going fast?
No, they're not rapping. Do you know what hip hop is, Em? Have you ever heard a rap record ever?
Yes.
Did you listen
but to I don't Mr. think Scarface's they sound back? Much.
Did you listen to Mr. Scarface's Back when I demanded it on our album Battle, Em? That is rapping.
Yeah, but that is not what Limp Bizkit's doing. I think Limp Bizkit are just going fast. That was my point.
I'm not going to argue that Limp Bizkit is rap. If you want to say it's not rap, I'll say fine.
I don't think it's rap.
Fine,
if you're
going to
say Slipknot and System of a Down aren't rap, then Limp Bizkit isn't rap. Because I think if you say they are, then the other bands are too. And I don't think they are.
I'm saying System of a Down definitely is not rap. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I just mean they're not rap. They're bad new metal.
You're not going to their one of their 4-3 dates?
No. I know a lot of people love System of a Down. I'm not a fan at all.
Why?
I think it's bad and cheesy. That's why.
Fair enough.
I
like System of a Down. I think they're cool.
Well, that's fine. But speaking of someone else that's not bad and cheesy, but he's got problems. I actually wanted to ask Roger about this.
Peter Murphy?
Peter Murphy has canceled his up. So here's the background. Bauhaus reunited. They canceled because Peter Murphy couldn't do it. Peter Murphy announces a David Bowie tour in USA. He cancels that because he can't do it. Peter Murphy announces another tour. He cancels that. Peter Murphy announces a Bowie tour in Europe.
Yeah,
cancels
Europe.
That. In the meantime, between there, he went into rehab. I think it was after Bauhaus he went into rehab.
After Bauhaus he went into rehab.
And then he's actually not only announced some dates for 2025, he's actually announced a full tour for 2025 already, even though he dropped off this one, which wasn't even – well, January is actually like real soon.
When are the new dates for?
The summer.
Okay.
But I feel like Peter Murphy needs to not tour right now. I feel like Peter Murphy needs to work on himself. And there's two ways to look at it is – and I really want to ask Roger about this. Is you could say the booking agent is pushing him and say, Peter, you need to get it back out on the road because I need to make money, which could be the case. But although I don't know if you can push Peter Murphy around, although maybe you can. You'd be surprised some people that do get pushed around. For example, Em, check this out. According to sources behind the scenes, who do you think the boss of Kiss is?
Gene Simmons.
Wrong. According to behind the scenes, Paul Stanley.
Okay.
The point, and apparently okay. Paul Stanley pushes around Gene Simmons. I mean, that's just the rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. But the point being is, so is Peter Murphy's booking agent pushing him around? Maybe. Or is Peter Murphy calling up his booking agent saying, I demand you go on tour because I want money and maybe needs money. In that case, then, what does the booking agent do? Does the booking agent put him on tour? Or does the booking agent say, I'm not going to do it? You know what I mean?
I think it would be like, well, I'll give you a couple months or something. Like, I'm not going to book you immediately. You're going to need to meet certain milestones to be like, okay, are you healthy enough? Are you in a good place to do this? Okay, now we can do this. But Peter Murphy
might say to his booking agent, well, then I'm going to fire you.
Well, if the shows aren't being fulfilled, you're not making any money, so that's fine.
Here's my perspective. If I'm the booking agent and Peter Murphy said, and this is all total conjecture.
Right.
I mean, and can we agree that we're pretty sure what the problem is at this point?
I think so.
Yeah. So if you're the booking agent, Peter Murphy says, put me on tour. I think you got to say no, A, from a moral perspective. But even the, moreover, is if you're booking a guy and he's constantly canceling, that looks bad for you as the booking agent. You know what I mean? You're gonna lose business. B,
right.
If somebody goes on tour and dies on tour, then you look real bad. And also, true. you don't want someone to die on tour. You want them to live. You know what I mean? So I think what you got to do is say, Peter, man, I've been working with you however many years. You're the greatest. And he is. You really need to, you know, work on yourself. And if you got to fire me, then you got to fire me. I'll be here when you get back. You know, and I wish you well.
Yeah.
Because I don't exactly know what Peter Murphy's problem is, but you know, I've worked on several projects with current and recovering heroin addicts, and they all pretty much say the same thing. With heroin, you're never going to convince someone they should get off heroin. There's only two results with heroin. Someone decides they don't want to do heroin anymore and stops doing heroin, or they die. That's the only two paths. There's no other paths. And so with Peter Murphy, it seems like he's in that cycle right now. You know what I mean?
It could be. It could be. Like with the rehab after Bauhaus and stuff. Like, again, I hope he gets the help he needs, you know, if that's the case.
I think he's going to like one of these country club rehabs where it's really more like a vacation. It doesn't really have good long-term results. I mean, I don't know. You know,
like, okay, you're detoxed for like X amount of weeks and then go.
Yeah. Like because he keeps having these problems and it's a bummer because he's an amazing musician, but you know, it's been a rough 3 years for Peter Murphy. You know what I mean? It's been, and he keeps booking shows. That's the thing is, it'd be one thing if it was canceled right. And he went away or he got arrested or something. I mean, remember he got arrested for not that long ago.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So he keeps like canceling tour. Like he can't, he, I mean, look, let's look at it this way. He canceled the Bowie tour 2 or 3 weeks ago and he's already announcing a different summer tour 5 months from now. That seems way too soon, you know?
Way too soon.
So I don't know. But on the other hand, go ahead.
No, unless it's something where it's like, it's good for me to like be busy or whatever, but it's like, I don't think so.
If you have the kind of issues we think he has, it's never good to be on the road when there's tons of quote bad people around, you know, and temptations, you know, at least at this point in time, you know?
Yeah. Like give it some time, get a bit more solid.
But on the other hand, is if he doesn't want to, you know, fix himself up, then you're never going to convince him. So, I don't know. Tough situation. That's why I would have loved to ask, like, Roger about, like, what do you do when you've got a bandmate that's in that spiral, you know?
Yeah, like, you can't really break them out of it. Like, you can try your best. But again, like, it's that person's decision.
Pretty much all my clients and people I've written about and written with, that have, you know, that have been addicts, you can't convince someone not to be an addict. They either they decide they don't want to be an addict or they keep being an addict until they die. That's it. It's pretty much uniform. Like you can't say, you know, look how much better your life is without drugs. But if they don't want to get clean, they're not going to get clean. You know what I mean? So anyway, kids, don't do drugs, man. Drugs are bad.
I can't find a thing about him getting arrested.
And what's your opinion on drugs, Em?
My opinion on I found the arrest thing. Sorry. My opinion on drugs. There's a lot of really dangerous stuff, and even if you think something's safe, it's not. That's very vague, but like if you are going to use, like use with people, test your shit, because like fentanyl kills, it's everywhere.
Well, I think no one should
There's
do
such an opioid like crisis. No, I'm not saying do drugs. I'm just saying if you do, like you need to be very
Well, I'm saying
responsible about
don't.
it.
I'm saying don't, Em. I'm saying there is no responsibility with regards to, Genesis Peoria had an interesting perspective. I interrupt you, though. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's just, it's one of those things where, from like where I am and where I'm around, like there's a lot of abuse of opioids. There's a lot of like overprescribing of it. There's a lot of like, oh, a doctor gave this to me, so it's fine. There's a lot of people who have experienced like really bad stuff and might be hooked on something that isn't, that wasn't their doing. Like there's a lot of things like that. So it's a very like complicated issue. I think if somebody has has a history with drug use, coming at them with like very harshly isn't necessarily going to do them any good. And it's like we need to focus on the prevention of it, and helping that way. So it's just, it's very hard to, like, obviously don't do drugs, right? But it's like you have to be so aware of kind of what it is, what's around you, and what to do if somebody is in a bad way too, like again, Narcan and all that.
Penny Rimbaud and Genesis Peoria separately kind of expressed the same exact opinion in that, they love drugs, but they were both very anti-opioids. And, Genesis Peoria being mystical and in the occult, he said that,
Right.
like, opioids are destructive magic or something like that, and psychedelics are constructive magic. So I mean, I'm anti-drug, but I agree, like, opioids are bad shit, man. Like, there are
Yeah.
no heroin success stories. There's no heroin story where, like, yeah, man, it was great. Like, heroin is just bad and all that. So don't do drugs, kids. That's what I'm saying. And if you're going to do drugs, then smoke the ganj. If you really got to do drugs, you can smoke a little weed. That's all right. Not that big of a deal. Stay away from the hard stuff.
Make sure you get your weed from a trusted supplier or the
Well, there you,
government.
or you can grow it yourself. So there you
Yeah.
have M. Let's wrap today up with one final story. Cheetah
What
Chrome.
do we have? Oh, yes.
So there was the whole Cheetah Chrome debacle, where did we talk about this on the podcast before the whole the
We
first part
talked
of the
about the
story?
Dead Boys stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, that's right. And I talked about how the
Yeah.
PR guy called me up and tried to yell at me, and I was having a bad day, so I fired right back.
Yeah.
And so somehow through me punching back, we got an interview with Cheetah Chrome, and he was kind of mad. He's like, "I want equal time." So I'm like, "That's fine. I'll definitely talk to him." You know what I mean? And the interview was pretty good, man. He was pretty frank. So in the interview, Cheetah Chrome says, "No, there is not a fake AI album." He was a little vague. He said, "We were thinking of doing an AI track to using a unreleased Steve Bader's vocal, and we would use AI to repair it, much in the way that Paul McCartney claimed that they made that. Remember that there was that Beatles track from like a year ago
Yeah.
where they, at
John
first,
Lennon.
Paul McCartney's like, yeah, we used AI to make a John Lennon vocal. And then everyone freaked out and he's like, oh no, we just found a demo and used AI to repair it. It's like, all right, Paul,
Sure. Sure.
And so, and I'm gonna go, like, Paul, listen, Paul used to be my favorite Beatle. I think he's still the most talented Beatle, but he's not my favorite Beatle anymore. Now it's Ringo. Paul loves to say shit and then totally backtrack. Like, when he was talking smack on Mick, and then he got blowback, he's like, oh, I didn't mean it that way. It's like, yes, you did. You brought it up. Like, so someone wasn't like, don't you hate Mick? You just started talking about how much you hate Mick. Anyways, Paul, Paul is very much a Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart. Anyways, so in my interview with Cheetah Chrome, which was honestly like, well, I'm gonna go off track again.
Okay.
I've been doing interviews now tw almost 20 years. No, more than 20 years. Ew. I've been doing interviews 22 years, or maybe even
Yes.
23. And back in the day before the internet was huge, like people would say crazy shit. They'd be like, I'm like, let's say you're interviewing the Ramones, hypothetically. I'll just, you know, Johnny would be like, I hate Joey. He's an asshole, you know? And so like, and the interview would be like shocking or whatever. But now that everything everyone says is immediately broadcasted across the internet instantly, essentially, artists are have become much more savvy with regards to interviews, you know what I mean? And
oh yeah,
and even more so, and this is part of the interviewer's fault too, is interviewers have become more tame and more meek, and even myself to a degree, and that they don't really ask the hard-hitting questions anymore because the connection, because A, rock or music media isn't as powerful as it used to be. Music media used to be able to make or break a band, no problem. And that's why there's so much hinky jinkiness in the 70s and 80s. Now, I don't think, actually, even 10 years ago or 15 years ago, Pitchfork could make or break a band easy. Now, I don't know if any publication makes or breaks a band. I think it's really more YouTube and social media and companies pumping money into advertising via social media, you know? And so when music publications had the upper hand, you could ask the crazy questions, and also artists were more willing to be open, you know? But now that publications don't have the leverage they used to have, you kind of got to be like, oh man, well, I don't really want to piss off a publicist or even the band, because then we'll never have to talk to them ever again, or it'll be a thing, you know? And so interviews aren't as frank and as open as they used to be, which is a real bummer. I mean, I go back and I read some of those vintage Rolling Stone magazines from the late 70s and early 80s, or Trouser Press, or any of those classic music magazines, and they're like the interviews are just amazing. And it, like you do wonder, like, why did so-and-so even ever agree? Like, I've got this one with Yoko Ono where it's after John Lennon got killed, and Yoko Ono is a relatively unsympathetic character. Maybe. Like she just comes off as so poorly. There's other ones where like certain artists are just like portrayed as total drug addicts that can't even tie their own shoes, and you're like, why is anyone agreeing to an interview? You're like, but on the other hand, like Ozzy being a total maniac that doesn't have shit together at all in 1984 sells millions of records, so maybe that is useful to them. You know what I mean? I guess it is. You know?
Yeah, Diary of a Madman.
Yes. Yeah, so, but now music publications are so much more careful. There are a lot of interviews are really just like press releases, which really bums me out, and which is why I love doing profiles the most, because profile, you have the most room to step away from a press release, if you will. So anyway, I interviewed who did I interview? Em? Cheetah Chrome. and it was an old school style interview. He's like, you know, I hate Jake. And actually, he said a whole bunch of stuff off record, which was pretty cool. And he's, you know, Jake just doesn't understand, and he's out of the band. You can't tell me what to do, motherfucker. I'll tell you what to do. You know, so it was a great old school style interview. He was all hopped up and he was furious. And so I'll ask you whether or not you believe his story or not. He says that they were just using Stiv's voice to repair it for a one-off track that they didn't even like, so they didn't decide to use it. But then actually about 2 hours after I did the interview, I interviewed him. I put the interview up right away because I got tipped off that other people were interviewing him as well. I'm like, I want the first interview, you know? So we whipped it up like within an hour. He calls me like 2 hours later and he's like, how come you didn't put most of the interview in there? I'm like, I literally put every single thing you said in there except for the things you said off record. He's like, well, put that on. I'm like, are you sure you want me to put that on? He's like, you didn't put in most of the interview at all. And I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, I talked about X, I talked about Y, I talked about Z. I'm like, no, you didn't. And then he realized that he confused my interview with the other interview. And
shit.
You know? So I'm like, you didn't talk about any of that. You know what I mean?
And that's so funny.
To his credit, he went from being like enraged to like calming down like really quickly. I'm like, wow. I'm like, I thought this was going to be like a big battle. And so I'm like, you didn't say any of that. I would have loved to print that, but you didn't say any of that, you know? And so he was pretty bummed out and pretty hopped up. He said something in the interview that you would be hard pressed to find any band to say these days. He said, I'm mad at our fans for turning their back on me, which I thought was cool. He was being honest. You know what I mean? Although it's very hard to find a band to say something like that these days, you know? Right. And so Em, how do you think Cheetah Chrome came off, and whose side of the story do you buy?
Oof.
And what's your opinion of AI and music?
AI and music can fuck off.
Oh, and actually,
Horrible.
one other thing is I thought I was going to have to butter him up. So I'm like, yeah, the new live record is really good,
Yeah.
which actually it is. Like the Dead Boys just put out an archive live record from like 1976 or 78. It's actually super good, like super good. So I'm like trying to butter
Nice.
him up, and he's like, "Are we going to talk about AI or what?" I'm like, "Ah, man." And it's funny, it's a couple of people like dogged on me for like leaving it in there like that, but I'm like, no, like
It's fun. It's how it went. Yeah.
that's like a really funny moment. Like it really shows you who he is at that point. You know what I mean? Like, and that's another thing is like a lot of interviewers are scared to make themselves look human or have a human moment in there, you know? Like they always want to make it look like you've got total control of the interview. But the point of an interview isn't to
No.
show that you are in total control. The point of an interview is to get interesting and thought-provoking material. You know what I mean? And so I don't mind being caught off guard in the interview if that makes it interesting. You know what I mean?
It's not the okay, I'm gonna edit this in post to make it
Right,
seem like
right.
I did the right, I knew the right thing.
Right, right.
I've done that like a couple times. 'Cause it's like I had it written down and then I didn't
Yeah.
say it or whatever. It's like, ah, fuck. No, it's funny that you mentioned that because like that was something I wrote down because I was reading it and I got to that part and I laughed because I'm like, oh my God. He's just like, yep, enough of this, let's go. We're here for the meat of the interview. Here it is. Well, like there, I just have a lot of questions, honestly. Like the the amount of times he said he has a problem or Jake has a problem with alcohol, and then the what would you do if you saw him? Well, I'd offer him a beer if he was doing well. I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, I thought that was really like funny and kind of weird and just kind of like the personal attacks, like the he's not smart enough to understand AI kind of thing. Like didn't outright say it, but like implied it, right? We understand it so well and like all this kind of stuff. The thing about like them getting into a fight in a bathroom
Backstage at a show.
backstage at a show, that was kind of like what's this, what happened there? Because it's okay, he's making it out that there were tensions like very high before he left, and then the thing of you asked was he fired or did he quit, and then that he quit before we could fire him
Yeah, right.
thing. So it's just kind of like how much of this is accurate, like what's the real story, you know?
Yeah.
That's just kind of my thing. I'm just very skeptical about the whole thing. It was a good interview, though. I mean, I enjoyed reading it.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I never cared about the quote new Dead Boys at all. I'm like, I don't need to see one guy from the Dead Boys. But apparently, everyone says he was actually like a really good singer. Although maybe what, like, I don't know. Like
Hard
if
to
you go,
know.
I kind of wish I did go. I think I had a couple of chances to go see him. I just did. I'm like, I don't need to see like one guy from the Dead Boys, you know? And Dead Boys aren't even like my favorite punk band, but I do like that first record a lot. Well, actually, maybe I'm not that. Because like, if you go see like quote Black Flag, which is Greg Ginn and Three Knuckleheads, it's so not fulfilling. You know what I mean? Like, even if it's good, it's not. It's like, you know.
Yeah, it's like, what did
So,
I just do?
yeah. It's like it's not Black Flag. You know, it's not the Dead Boys. It's Cheetah Chrome and some dudes. You know, so. Oh, but there's also one other thing
Yeah.
is he mentioned there's a record coming. Remember that record that actually we mentioned at Punk News? It's Cheetah Chrome, James Williamson. Who's the other person that's pretty cool?
Glenn Matlock.
Glenn Matlock. That sounds pretty cool, honestly.
It does.
And the interview, he's like, it's Cleopatra is calling it a Dead Boys record, but it's not, you know, which gives an insight into the contract, you know, which kind of explains how we got where we're at.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where we're at.
I don't think it's the end of this. That's all I'm gonna say.
I do think it's the end of it, in
Do?
that, like, I just think Cheetah Chrome is going to come back with another version of the Dead Boys, and no one's going to really care. I mean, I don't think it's the end of AI. I think it's only going to get worse, worse, and worse, much worse, particularly from certain labels.
Who could they be?
But I mean, I'm really not to be a downer. I'm really bummed on the whole AI thing, Em. I think it's not good at all. I think it's like really, really bad, and I think people don't realize how bad it's going to be, frankly.
Yeah, it's already bad. It's not
Like people forget, like
it's not good.
AI is so much, quote, better now than it was even 2 years ago. Like, so much better, you
Because it's
know?
learning.
Yeah, I know it's like freaky, man. But I never feel good after seeing something that's AI. Like Punk Rock Bowling, they made an ad that said, call our hotline and leave a funny story. And instead of paying some kid to draw a picture for $50, they AI generated an image, you know? And it's
Oh,
like,
ew.
yeah, I know. Like,
Like, why? You're a punk festival.
find some talented high school kid and give him $50. He'll be thrilled. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, he'll be like over the moon. It'll be
yeah.
so much
Or
fun.
her. Doesn't have to be him. And it could be her.
Excuse me, any of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. Like, again, no one's gonna get anywhere, right? If it's just this. Also, AI is supposed to be, what's the quote like?
Shitty?
No, oh, well,
Really
I mean,
shitty?
yeah, really shitty, but
Extremely
like
shitty?
the
The end of humanity.
end of humanity is up there. But it was like it's the thing where these automations were supposed to make it so I would have more time to do my art, not so they would do my art for me.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's like, how come I still
Yeah.
have to, like, you like take take out
Do
my
the
trash?
dishes.
Yeah, like it shouldn't be the other, you know, like AI's doing art and I'm still doing my own dishes, you know what I mean? So it's like,
Yeah.
it's pretty shitty, man. I don't know, man.
Really shitty. And like even sorry.
And what like and people are kind of rolling over, like in the Punk Rock Bowling Facebook group. Someone put like, look at this AI, it's like totally lame. Most people were attacking them, and it's like go get a life. It's like, well, no, actually that's kind of an important issue. You know what I mean? Like they were
It
really
is.
attacking them. It's like that's lame. Like, psh, like pay someone $50 to draw a stupid picture. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, man. I'm bumming out, Em. I'm bumming out.
I'm trying to remember because I saw it today. Exclaim posts a oh no, that's not what I want. Stupid. There you go. Posted worst album covers of 2024. And I'm trying to remember. Okay. Yes, it was the Tears for Fears. They did a an AI generated one. It, that like people lashed out against so hard that the artist had to come out and try to defend it, and their defense was so bad. And it looks really terrible. The guy has like sunflower nipples.
How come they put Snoop Dogg's Missionary as the worst album cover?
Oh, I don't remember. Oh, it was because like he used to be dangerous, now he's advocating safe sex and the
Oh,
boring
I see.
state, the boringest sex position. I like the Black Dahlia murder one because I looked at it and I'm like, it looks fine. And then the description is just, it's a butthole.
I will say that this game article is pretty funny. The Garfunkel and Garfunkel picture is like really bad too.
Like the Taylor Swift write-up. I think that one's my favorite.
Oh, I have the Italian. Maybe it wasn't one picking on Taylor. This picture's fine.
It's
Why don't,
funny.
it doesn't look cheap. It looks like a Fleetwood Mac album cover. They're assholes. I hate Exclaim now. Their records
Yeah,
were fine.
you gotta look at Squid Pisser
I'm looking right now. I mean, that band's supposed to be over the top, though. You know what I mean? Like,
They're gr yeah.
Black Dahlia Murder. Black Dahlia Murder is pretty bad. I'll give him
It
that.
looks like a butthole.
It does look like a butthole. Let's
There's
see.
also the Piss and Love one. There's a lot of like piss. It's
Yeah,
me.
but then
Oh, the
there's
Paris Hilton one is AI generated too. Sorry.
I think with like not that I think it's a good band, but pissing like they're supposed to be over the top. So if you say something that's purposely bad is bad, that's like not really, you know. The what are the tears for? Oh, let me see. What.
Tears
Let's
for
see.
Fears is number two.
Who's number one? Sing Quanta.
Maynard
That's pretty
James Keenan.
bad.
It's really bad.
Anything else we should talk about this week, or should we wrap it on down? Or wrap it on up?
Wrapped on down. Do we have any? Oh, we had the Iggy Pop thing, the live video.
What'd you think of that?
I thought it was good. The man has a lot of skin.
I actually think it's extremely awesome, and here's why. The performance itself is—I mean, Iggy's 70-something. So as, if we do it by the metric of a 70-year-old, it's freaking amazing. But on any metric, it's at least pretty good. But I actually think like Iggy's one foot is much longer than the other now because I think he like hurt it sometime or something like that. So when he walks, he like has a very weird gait, you know. He's got a lot of skin. And you know, he looked kind of beaten up. But I actually think it's like super awesome that Iggy is still being Iggy at 70. It's
Hell
like very
yeah.
life. It's a life affirming. It's like he's still the rock titan at 70 or however old he. Actually, I think he's older than 70. Actually,
I think
I'm
he's
sure
older
he's
than
older.
70.
I think he's like 76 or something. Let's take a quick look here.
But yeah, kicking ass. The crowd's into it.
77, man.
77. Ooh.
He's not even letting time defeat him, which is super.
No, he is not letting time defeat him. He is timeless. He is ageless. And he has so much energy still. Like, that's absolutely amazing. The crowd's singing along. Like, they're really loving it. He's loving it. They're feeding off of each other. He does a little dance at one point. The horn section sounds incredible. It's just, like, it's such a good representation of, like, punk, you know, and, like, the enduring spirit that it is, especially with him.
Well said, and did you know I accidentally cut myself out of the meeting?
Yep. So I picked up.
Job.
I ranted.
I caught the last sentence of your rant, and I thought it was sounded good to me. So very good.
Thank you.
And what song should we send him on out with?
Well, we were talking about Iggy Pop. Can we play the live version of The
Passenger?
Yeah,
let's do it. Let's do it.
Because it was really good.
Yeah, it's cool. And we will see you when will we see them? Oh, next week I think it's going to be Christmas episode. Let me look.
Oh, already?
And Sammy B is going to be back.
Yeah.
And so let's see here. You can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. Also, if you're a publicist and I say, I'm sick of your games, leave me alone for a while. Definitely leave me alone for a while. Well, yeah. And we got the Christmas episodes next week because the next Wednesday after that is Christmas Day.
Oh,
so
my
next
God.
Week's going to be Christmas. So there you go.
This month has gone so fast.
And what are we going to do Christmas week, though? Do you want to record two episodes, or what do you want to do?
The week before Christmas?
Yeah, well, let's wrap this episode up, and then we'll figure out real quick. Next week, Christmas episode, you can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. Any closing words for the listeners out there?
Don't trust Subway.
Yeah, pick me up, baby. Stars come out. passenger. He rides and he rides. He sees things from under glass. He looks through his window inside. He sees the things he knows are his. He sees a bright and hollow sky. He sees the city sleep at night. He sees the stars are out tonight. And all of it.